Become our friend on Facebook. Post on our wall your thoughts about our shows and network. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaBusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do With It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hello, welcome back to the show, What's Leadership Got to Do With It. For those of you who may be first-time listeners, welcome to the show. For those of you who may have listened to the show in the past, welcome back. We're going to, as the last two shows kind of fell out of the traditional norm where I just did not have a guest on. I do have a guest today, Dr. Gordon Medlock, who was on our show previously and also is a member of the firm, who I'll reintroduce here in a moment. But today's subject is on coaching, and the whole concept of what's leadership got to do with it was the outcome of the book that's in the process of being written currently. And the book speaks to what leadership has to pay attention to in terms of running a successful business and what we call the fundamental five. And each of the five chapters of the book speak to the five elements that a leadership must pay attention to. And those are the cultural dynamics of the organization, how those operate and function, and the individual performers, the group dynamics of an organization, the business plan that a business operates under, the structure to which it operates under, and leaders must pay attention to those. And part of leadership, as we've kind of expanded the program into these 15 shows, we have two more shows to follow. Next week's show will be on coaching as a continuation of this. It'll be more about coaching from an overall company perspective and the difference between an internal coach and an external coach. But today's show is going to focus on why executive coaching and why should that happen and what do we need to do to make sure we are being more effective in the ability to select a coach and identify a coach. And Gordon and I are going to talk today about some philosophical things, but also we're going to talk about the appropriate structure that we feel is necessary to have a successful outcome. And if you're going to look for a firm to do your executive coaching, you know, why would you look at the executive group and Gordon and myself, or maybe pick someone else? But the focus today is going to be what's that process look like and what really needs to happen if you're going to be a successful outcome. So, my guest again is Dr. Gordon Medlock. And, Gordon has an extensive background in coaching. And, so Gordon, why don't you fill in the listeners again for those who may be new and didn't get a chance to hear you in one of our previous shows where we talked about team building. But introduce yourself and kind of your background and elements of coaching that you've had in your past.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Rick. It's a pleasure to be on your show again. In terms of my background, particularly as it relates to coaching, I've had a psychology practice for a number of years, done both life coaching and executive coaching. So I have a pretty good sense of the spectrum of issues that can kind of come up during a coaching session, because oftentimes you may find that you're dealing with somebody with a performance issue, and then it turns out there's some personal issues that are really getting in the way of their performance, and those need to be addressed. So at least being able to have the skill set to identify those issues and those behavioral factors that can influence the productivity of a person or their effectiveness, it's important to be able to have someone who's comfortable with dealing with those kind of situations. So I think I bring that, as well as, of course, our strength in our assessment package that we use and really doing an in-depth assessment of the people that we are coaching to make sure that we understand exactly what the dynamics are and what the potential is there, and the skill sets that are available and what can be developed. All of that is part of our assessment process that I think is really a big differentiator for our group. So In all those respects, I think that this is, I think, what we bring to the table on this that's really important in terms of the coaching perspective.
Well, one of the things that we're going to touch on a little later in the show is our assessment process, which Gordon speaks to, and it is a very robust process that we'll kind of outline. But because most of the things that we deal with really stem from, well, some of the things that we deal with in coaching stems from a lack of understanding or having a skill set in a particular area of competency. But in many cases, the things are driven by the behavior and the thinking style of an individual that helps understand how that individual is hardwired. And the depth of our assessment process and the instruments that we use are very sophisticated in nature. They're not your typical garden variety, commodity-based, four-dimensional item, such as a DISC or predictive index or even a Myers-Briggs, but a more sophisticated level of assessment that we utilize in that process. But in terms of helping an executive, there's three things that wind up where coaching really becomes involved in, and that's coaching for performance and coaching for development and coaching in crisis, or what we refer to as an intervention. So, Gordon, you want to kind of explain the difference between those three? It's pretty self-explanatory to most people,
sure.
But in terms of where we might get called in, when we look at those three scenarios, give us a quick debrief on that.
Yeah, and I think, and just a step back in that too, is at what point does a manager feel that they themselves are not quite equipped to deal with the issue and really want to bring in an executive coach? So, if it is a performance issue, of course, one of the skill sets that we like to encourage the managers to really develop in an organization is that performance management capability. So you want to have your managers be strong in that. And I think part of what we're going to talk about next week is the idea of creating a coaching culture where your managers are really skilled to do a lot of this work in terms of some of this kind of coaching that we're talking about. But in a situation where the manager feels that maybe, they're not really the best person to kind of help this situation and they really need to bring somebody else from the outside, certainly on the performance management side, we'll look at what are the performance gaps. We'll have meetings with the manager as well as with the executive to determine where those gaps are, what the expectations are, and really put together a plan to make sure that everyone's in agreement around what success is going to look like. Because once you have a clear picture of success, you know what you're working toward. If that isn't clearly defined, then you can have a lot of confusion. So that's one kind of coaching that you're talking about, Rick, I know, is the performance type. In terms of development, you might have an individual that you're really grooming for a position in your succession plan or another higher level position that you want to see them move up to in the management pipeline. And in that case, really defining the job specifications for that job, the experience and competences required, and doing a gap analysis against that versus where the person is now and what kind of skills they're going to need to work on and what experiences they need to create in order to be able to move into that next position. A lot of times those are issues of confidence to be able to step into a new position, and we can kind of help with that process as well. And then the third that you mentioned, that situation where there's a crisis, where they pick up the phone and say, we've got a real problem right now. We've got a situation where something's blown up, and one of our managers is just had a really negative interaction with a key client or a customer or an employee, and we need to have somebody come in right now and deal with the situation. So, Rick, I think you can speak to, I know you've been in a couple of those situations where that was what was required. Do you want to speak a little bit to kind of how you handled that kind of situation and what you'd recommend for people in that kind of situation?
Well, and that one's a tough one because in any three of those situations, once the assessment work is done, it may be a situation where the only recommendation to the organization is that executive needs to be removed. And that's the toughest part. So when you come into a crisis situation, the determination is that, so what's the significance of what's happening here? What are the dynamics? I had one client brought me in on an intervention. They oversaw a plant manager role in South America with 60% of companies, $2 billion company, with 60% of their business came out of the manufacturing entity in Mexico. Crisis evolved. The leader was not succeeding well at all. Matter of fact, had lost $1 million to the bottom line in the previous 12 months. And just a number of things had gone awry. And in the attempt to see if there was anything salvageable from the coaching perspective, having done the assessment work in the 360s and the interviews, it was really deemed that it was in the best interest of the organization to let this individual go. Now, that really puts us in a hard, between a rock and a hard spot, because then the concern is that we get looked at as coaches as axe murderers, so to speak, and that's not the role we want to play. It says, how can we help that executive? And that's not the way it always goes down. I mean, there's many times where we have executives that have actually turned themselves around. We did coaching with one of the senior executives at Pepsi-Cola General Bottlers that after several months, I wasn't sure if that was going to turn around or not. But after 8 months, the guy just started doing cartwheels and handstands and just really made huge inroads in terms of his success. So, but I feel that there was a real connection we developed in that. And so one of the values with Gordon and I is that if one executive may be more comfortable with myself or Gordon is certainly a value add, or if I think there's a situation where Gordon has a better ability to manage this particular person what I might have, you know, we can certainly have that advantage of not being stuck with one coach,
yeah.
Which adds the value for us. But as we look at then helping to drive an organization's ability to help their executives, it's across any one of those three domains. So, you know, the ideal thing as a coach is someone who can walk into a situation, see things that others may not see, and give them new insight. But also, a coach is someone who may walk in and help them see what they already see and just help them get clarity around it. So,
well,
is that right, Gordon?
Rick, I think you're speaking to a really important question. I think every manager has to face this question when they're looking at a candidate that's having an executive that's having some issues. Is this person going to be able to be motivated to make the change or not? Or is it possible that we really have to move toward an outplacement situation of some sort? So I think that is something where the assessment piece really can help us ground that decision for the executive and help them make that decision more clearly. So at least early on in the process, we can determine what's really going to be in the best interest, not only for the organization, for that employee as well, because if they're mismatched for the job, they're not going to find satisfaction in that position either, and it's going to be just a source of stress for them. So I think often we can help sort of clarify that for management, which I think can be very helpful.
Well, and one of the reasons we use the assessment process is because I live by the adage that every coaching assignment I go into, I go in with the mindset that says a man or woman went over against their will is of the same opinion still. So what I'm not looking for is somebody to give me lip service just to go along to salvage their job or because that's what they think they need to do. I'm looking for someone who has a pure buy-in and commitment that says, yeah, I know that I need help, and I'm willing to accept coaching as a means. Some people have a hard time accepting coaching because it's an ego thing, just like some people have a hard time going for counseling. But when you look at, you know, Tiger Woods has a golf coach, you've got batting coaches, you've got pitching coaches, you've got quarterback coaches, you've got linebacker coaches, you got tennis coaches. I mean, there's all kinds of coaches. So doesn't it make sense to have a coach in the business world? So we're getting ready to take a break, and we're talking about coaching, executive coaching, and what goes into a coaching process and the philosophy behind coaching that Gordon and I use and help drive in our clients. So when we come back from the break, we're going to kind of get into coaching as a process. So welcome to Leadership, What's Leadership Got to Do with It, and we look forward to having you back after the break.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Tune in every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. On the show, Aldana and some of today's top business professionals will discuss some of today's most pressing business issues that hold you, the business owner, back. Aldana will also give you 21 ways to grow with her list of growth strategies. Grow smart, grow profit, and grow your business with Aldana Ambler and The Growth Strategist every Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with my guest, Dr. Gordon Medlock and associate. And we're talking about coaching as a process and an outcome. And coaching is about, you know, transforming people. And, you know, all the way back in 1991, I saw an article in the Investor's Business Daily about getting ahead may mean getting a coach. And we're talking about transitioning an executive to become a learning executive is part of the process. And sometimes people resist learning to change their attitude or behavior. But when you're able to make accurate assessments and apply observations to validate them, you know, now you're trying to get that executive to start, you know, to look at learning for life and breakthrough thinking and having them think in different ways and change their thinking. And as people move through the organizational ladder, it requires a different thought process as you move from managing yourself to managing others, to managing managers, to managing business units, to managing functional units, to managing internationally. And as you move up that ladder, each of those rungs becomes more challenging with different viewpoints and different values and different work styles and different management styles that need to be to continue to develop to grow. And coaching is one of those ways to help that executive accomplish that. But you also have to have then a strong coaching outline. And I think that what Gordon and I bring to the table is that philosophy of that unless, you know, coaching is a process, and understanding that when you short circuit or circumvent or kind of piecemeal a coaching initiative together and kind of, you know, half it, so to speak, it doesn't have as strong an outcome as if you really understand all the components that go into what makes a successful coaching program. It's not just about sitting down with somebody and talking about their problems or their goals and their fears. It's a pretty sophisticated approach, or at least I think ours is, a pretty sophisticated approach to that. And so in that coaching outline, it's about clarifying objectives. It's about understanding all the pieces that go into that ability to clarify objectives. It's about understanding the level and kinds of things that need to go into a personal assessment. And it's not just a 360. You can't just take a 360 by itself and create a coaching process, which some people think you can. You can to a degree, but it lacks some things, and we'll talk about why that is. You've got to be able to debrief with management and the individual. You've got to create action plans, and you've got to have a coaching contract, believe it or not. And then you've got to revisit the results to make sure progress is being made. So what Gordon and I are going to talk about in this next segment is that as we define each of those areas, what goes into that and what should you expect from your executive coach that you bring on board for the organization? What should you expect to be able to identify? So Gordon, let's talk about clarifying objectives. What are the things that you and I work on that are critical in that clarifying objective segment?
Well, I mean, it all begins with that analysis of the situation and determining exactly what the level of issue we're talking about is. Is it a performance issue? Is it a development issue? Or is it a personal crisis or organizational crisis issue where we have immediate intervention? So your objectives are going to be driven by the nature of the problem you're dealing with, right? So part of that is to identify, okay, if it's a performance issue, what are our expectations? Make those clear. And that includes meeting with the executive's manager to make sure that those expectations are clear at that end, because oftentimes the issue is one of is this executive actually meeting the manager's expectations or not, and what are those expectations, and what's the quality of the communication between the two of them. So part of that is just to determine, you know, what are the issues? What are the dimensions of the issues? Is there a communication issue between the manager and the executive that might need to be part of the coaching equation? Sometimes it may be that we're being brought in for this because of such an issue that the manager themselves doesn't feel comfortable trying to deal with this particular executive in this situation. And in that case, we may end up working with the manager as well as with the executive to try to decide how to best strategize this. So the objectives are really going to come out of an in-depth understanding of what the problem is and where does we want to get at that point. So that's really where we start. One of the things I wanted to add to that also, Rick, is you mentioned the importance of a competency model that the organizations often use for structuring things like coaching and development. And I just want to say that in our experience, we've seen a lot, and we do a lot of work with organizations in helping them define those well so that those models are effective. But even your best models are going to miss something in terms of the behavioral piece, that even if you've got a clearly defined set of competencies around, if you will, integrity or results orientation or teamwork or the kinds of things that you typically see in a lot of the competency models. A lot of times the issues that bring a person to coaching are behavioral ones that may be under the radar or not quite identified in those competency models. So we find that you really also need to do the assessment on those personality factors or behavioral factors that are influencing it and develop some of those objectives related to solving those issues as well as the ones that are more clearly defined in the organization. Is that something you find as well in terms of your work with organizations?
Well, because the behavior usually has an impact on the competency, or the behavior or thinking style usually impacts the competency. So understanding the competency that the organization wants that individual to manage to, helping that individual understand how their behavior works for or against them as it relates to executing a specific competency is critical. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the reasons why what we like to start out with is that in terms of clarifying objectives, we're going to sit down with the manager, we're going to have an in-depth interview with that manager, we want to understand the job requirements, the expectations, what the competencies are that the executive needs to, what the issues are surrounding that, what kind of opportunities for advancement or how that ties into succession planning, or maybe the outcome of the last performance management situation. I had a president of an organization, one of our clients, asked me to come in, and he said, you know, I want you to coach our VP of R&D. And I said, okay, so what's the situation? And he said, well, every year, and he said, it just hit me. He said, every year for the last 3 years, I've sat down with my VP of R&D and said, here's the things that I think that I really are critical to work on. And he would look at me and say, well, if that's what you think I need to work on, then I'll address them. And then he never did, because there was never any ownership or any agreement that he had issues. And so... Back to Gordon, your point, and that is that how do we help sit down with that executive and start to really map out, you know, what the issues are, and that's where we have to sit down with an introductory meeting and start to clarify objectives. And where we wind up going with all this is we look at the level of the involvement and what we think, Gordon and I think, needs to go into an executive package. Certainly it extends itself in terms of the amount of time, which then also translates into a cost factor. And that's where some organizations go, geez, I don't know if we want to spend that much money. Well, the question is, so you're paying an executive $120,000 a year, or maybe $250,000 a year as a case of my South American example, or $175,000 a year in case of my VP of R&D. And so you've got issues there, and so what's the investment in coaching? It's minimal, but we start to look at the dollars around coaching instead of the outcome that coaching can create. So in my South America example, that individual was already cost the organization $1 million in bottom line cost with a $250,000 package that included a severance package. So, you know, what's the cost of then coaching come into play? Well, the significance behind us sitting down with that leadership team, Gordon and I sitting down with the leadership team and really understanding and clarifying the objectives behind that helps us do a better job of the outcome and our recommendations as we go forward. So that initial thrust, we feel, is critical.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Rick. And in terms of just looking at the ROI of these kinds of interventions, when you're talking about objectives, you know, the replacement of that talent is often hugely expensive in terms of getting the right person in, getting them up to speed. You're talking about a huge investment just to recover from a situation that's been, has not worked out. So if coaching can make a difference in that situation, it can be a huge saving for the organization, particularly if it's been a long-term employee that you want to retain, who you want to see to be able to make a change, but is just facing some challenges. Of course, it still can come out that that person may not be able to make the changes that are needed, and so that has to be addressed. But I think, to your point, these key talent positions are often critical to the success of the organization, and it really is a reflection of how committed is this organization to commit to the leveraging of their talent to execute their strategic plans. And we have found that the most successful organizations are the ones that really make talent a priority and the development of talent a priority. So, and I think coaching is a key part of that.
Well, and and one of our clients felt that they wanted to provide members of their high potential group the opportunity to develop, and so they put them through our assessment process, and then they put them through a DV process with me, but then left it up to the executive themselves to determine what they wanted to do with it. Well,
perfect.
If you don't have any type of outcome for the executive as a results process, and you don't have any follow up, guess what's going to happen to probably 90 to 95% of those situations?
Exactly.
They're probably not going to reach their full potential. So
exactly.
One of the things that's critical then is the ongoing process there. So step one is that clarifying objective. Step two then is the assessment process. And in our assessment process, and Gordon spoke to this in the beginning, it's a very thorough assessment process because it includes a battery of personality assessments. It includes a life history interview. It includes a 360-degree assessment. It includes peer reviews. And it includes then looking at and identifying from a gap analysis standpoint. Once we understand and clarify the objectives and the competencies, and now we get into do the personal assessment and the life history interview, which can be done in person or on paper. We've got a pretty detailed life history brief or executive history brief. It's very detailed. Probably takes 3 hours to fill out. And then there's the 360 process, and then there's the peer reviews and interviews that we think are critical. And then when you pull all that together and you start the gap analysis, you start to see where the gaps really lie, and then you can start to sit down and show that executive what their viewpoint is of themselves, what the 360 is saying, what their assessment work is saying, how all those things tie in together, and you've got some real quantifiable data. It's not subjective data. It's quantifiable data. So when we come back from the break, we're getting ready to take a break again. When we come back from the break, Gordon and I are going to get into a deeper dive on the assessment piece as it relates to creating an effective coaching model and that process we feel is so critical to its outcome. So we'll catch you at the break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just 2 salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
No family can survive on 2 incomes anymore, let alone 1. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network. the bottom line in business.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show. What's Leadership Got to Do with It? Today's subject is on executive coaching and the process that we believe is essential to have a successful outcome. And for those of you who may have looked at coaching or used coaches, or I think that sometimes our process is maybe more extensive than what it needs to be, but yet when I look at the extent of our process, I go, if I'm really going to do a great job, there's really nothing I'd take out. But so as we talk about, you know, we talked about clarifying objectives in our last, just before we went to break, and now we want to get into the assessment side, because that is so critical on the assessment side. And when you look at one of the things to identify the level of experience of a coach is the kinds of assessments that they use. Do they just use a 360? Is that 360 flexible? Can you adapt it to the environment, or is it a cookie cutter off the shelf? What do they do with peer reviews? Do they incorporate peer reviews and interviews? What do they do with assessments? What kind of assessments? What's the depth and breadth of the assessments that they use? Do they just use the Myers-Briggs? Do they use the OPQ, which is not a bad instrument? Do they just use the Hogan? Do they use a battery of assessments? And do they have a full-blown approach to where you're looking at everything from all angles? Well, I think that it's a three-headed dragon. Number one, it's the individual's perception and take on themselves and what they think they see. Number two, it's the in-depth component piece of the assessment work that looks at the in-depth piece of their personality to include their behavioral and thinking style and their intellectual prowess, if you will. And also it's what the organization feels from the sense of a 360. But the drawback in 360s is they don't yield the real telltale data that you need, so you need to back that up with some type of interviews, because I always get more in out of the interviews than I do out of the 360. Because, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well, but Gordon, in your background, using, the battery assessments of what you've seen that we've built here at the executive group, over time, go into more depth on your take on the assessment part.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I've always been impressed with is the 16PF, which I know you've done some pioneering work with some of the founders of that product, and it really gives you, it's for those of you who may not be familiar with that, that's 16 personality factors that are all at play in a person's situation and their personality, and they're ranked by the level of importance of each one. So you really get a chance to look at a number of the factors that are really decisive. Relationship factors, degree of warmth or distance in a relationship is one of the key things. And another piece is just intellectual capability. A lot of times people may be put in a position where the job is something bigger than they're really equipped to handle, and it's important to kind of get a sense on that. Sometimes that's not as easy to identify. So I think the 16PF is an incredibly flexible and powerful instrument in terms of looking at all the different factors that can be at play in looking at a person's personality structure and behavior and how that influences the situation. And frankly, Rick, I think your work in this area has been pioneering, and I think you provide a perspective and a use of those tools and some customized reports that really are exceptional in terms of being able to focus that work. Do you want to speak a little bit to some of the work you've done in that area, and particularly in how it's helped you sort of target some of your assessments with some key people?
Well, As I've done this for 20 years now and have incorporated a number of assessments, whether it be a selection process or a development or coaching or promotion type of thing, what I've come to learn over the years is that the more data that you have, the more informed decision you can make. So I might be able to get some data if I use, and one of the shows we did was called Making Sense of Testing with Dr. Dave Watterson. For those of you who listen to that show or want to go back and listen to that show, it's called Making Sense of Testing. And also the one we did on using assessments in the selection process. But now we're talking about using assessments in the development process. But what Gordon's speaking to is the level of sophistication of the instruments that we use. In other words, when we do an executive coaching battery, we will literally use six different assessments on that executive, cost and time permitting, obviously. But we use a 16PF because it's a great in-depth tool to measure the depth and breadth of a person's personality beyond what a DISC or predictive index or Myers-Briggs could bring to the table. So I could use, and we use the DISC in our practice, and Gordon has extensive background in the Myers-Briggs. I don't, but so we could use the DISC or Myers-Briggs or even a predictive index, but or even a caliper to drive coaching. But the problem is they're not deep enough and they're not broad enough and they don't give you enough real insight. And so in our executive battery or in our executive coaching, we'll use the 16PF. We also will use the DISC because it does show some differentiations in perceived versus self-personality, which supports things. We also use the Hogan, which is a very popular instrument, and we use the Hogan because the Hogan has a what they call the dark side, or it looks at where people's derailers may be. And Gordon spoke to derailers, where people kind of get sideways. And those three instruments help us really take a deep dive into the personality dynamics. The OPQ is not a bad instrument. The CPI is not a bad instrument, which is a California Personality Inventory. But then we also use a Thurston Test of Mental Alertness, which measures thinking, critical thinking skills, linguistic and quantitative. We also use a Watson-Glaser, which measures inductive and deductive reasoning to see if that executive has the deductive reasoning skills necessary. And we also use a Culture Fair, which is a peer IQ test. So when we get all that assessment data back, we're able to really do that deep dive to look at that executive's capabilities to determine, no matter what coaching situation we've gotten ourselves into, whether it's performance or development or crisis, we still have the ability to work with that executive and the organization to really define outcomes. Well, when you marry that information up against what you take away from that person's life history interview, and you marry that up with what you take away from the 360 and what you take away from peer reviews, guess what becomes is the richness of information and data that becomes undeniably, what's the word I want, Gordon? Can that executive really push back on us when we go to coach?
Exactly. And I just want to emphasize that you're describing really the Cadillac of what's available, you know, and this is for an executive that you've determined as an organization is a high priority person that you want to see develop, and you're willing to invest in that person at this level. So this is the Cadillac version. There are obviously sometimes where all we can do is a quick assessment because that's what the situation requires. And one of the strengths, of course, of any good coach is the ability to intuit as well a lot of this information and sort of pick it up on the fly quickly in your interactions with people. And I think both Rick and I have that ability as well, to really get a good quick assessment of an individual where the situation doesn't allow for as much of the time that we've talked about to really do this more thorough assessment. But when we're looking at a development perspective, we do recommend this level of depth, if at all possible, to help structure the person's development.
Yeah, so Gordon, let's talk just briefly, and we'll come back to the assessment piece, but let's talk briefly about, and I'll just mention briefly the life history piece. That's about a three-hour interview that we go through that kind of looks at that person's chronological evolution of where they started and where they come from and the things that go into that. That life history interview may include their wife in some situations if we're talking about dynamics there, believe it or not. But so you've got your personality assessments, and you've got the life history interview, which looks at life background. You've got the management interview because that's the initial clarifying objective. So you got management's perspective, you got the individual's perspective, and now you're going to move to do 360s and the peer review. And so one of the things that I found over the years is that a 360 does not yield the depth of information you need on an executive to help them see things that they may not be seeing. And Gordon, you want to just touch on that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of data that indicates that people don't know really what to do with that 360 data. It depends on the culture. A lot of times you'll see inflated scores. We had one situation where we were delivering a 360 to a client, and the culture was such that they wouldn't say anything negative about anybody. And, of course, part of that was they didn't know even though they were told this was all for development purposes, people have sometimes a high level of distrust of how this information might be used. They don't want to say anything negative. So you get these inflated scores that really don't give you much data. And to Rick's point, adding the individual interviews as part of the process gives a much richer sense of the data. So we found people that would, in fact, talk much more deeply about issues with one another or with their colleagues that were much more useful in terms from a coaching perspective in those individual meetings to supplement what was there in the 360. But, it is an issue, and people are generally aware with 360s. On the other hand, that's really a challenge for the culture to create an environment where feedback is perceived as valuable and important. I know there are many organizations where a manager won't get promoted without positive feedback from their direct reports on their performance, including an assessment of competencies as well as objectives. So if people really perceive that this is used in a positive way to really support the objectives of the organization, it's used fairly, you can start seeing a 360 as more effective. But even with that, we recommend the addition of some additional interviews just to make sure it's getting you the best quality information you can.
Well, I think one of the things that became very, very obvious a number of years ago, I had worked with an executive. He had gone to, he was in the automotive sector, was in the logistics side of things, got promoted to a plant manager. I worked with him in his coaching and development with his leadership team as the plant manager. Then he left that organization and became international director of logistics for a $2 billion company in the automotive sector. And then I followed his career there. Then he left and became a vice president general manager of a steel company. He brought me along there. And then about a year when he was there, he asked for me to come in and do a 360, on him and to see how well he was doing. And the 360 came back like he walked on water. And because everybody loved him because he's just a great guy and a great manager, and he's just one of those superior leaders that emulates all the things you're looking for in a solid leader. And by the way, there's 11 behaviors that we look for in the 16PF, and he emulated all 11, which is rare. But nonetheless, but when I did the interviews with his team, they talked to me candidly off the record about some things that really helped me sit down with that executive and give him some better insight to some things that had I only relied on the 360 and knowing how great this guy really is, I wouldn't have been able to find those things to help him gain some more insight in terms of his involvement in the organization. So there's certainly a huge value add in doing peer reviews and interviews. Again, it adds to the cost, which unfortunately it does, and it adds to the time, and it extends the length of what you're doing. But nonetheless, it's a critical component that adds into the assessment piece, the 360 piece, makes Gordon's and my job much easier to really then have that hard, tough love conversation with that executive.
Well, and in terms of the cost factor, Rick, just to mention, given the executive salary that you're dealing with and the value that that executive creates, it's really a relatively minor number relative to the importance and advantage that's gotten from really good quality coaching and assessment. So there again, I think it's like taking one of your most valuable assets of your organization and making sure that it's absolutely in tune with what you want to accomplish. I think the ROI is pretty clear on that.
Well, we're getting ready to take our third and final break. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. If you've got any questions, you can email us at rick@theeg.com, or you can call in at 866-472-5790 with questions. We welcome them. Gordon and I are talking about executive coaching, and when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the tools and the outcome. Once we've got all the other things in place, now what's the outcome to have a successful coaching package or successful coaching endeavor? So we'll catch you after the break.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G?
Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back to the show, What's Leadership Got to Do with It? I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my guest and colleague, Dr. Gordon Medlock. And we are talking about coaching as a general practice and guideline and its principles and things that we think as two individuals who do a lot of executive coaching as part of our practice of what we feel is necessary for those people who really want to understand more about what goes into the process and the methodology and the philosophy and what our particular philosophy happens to be. But we've talked about everything including assessments, and we spent some time talking about derailers. And Gordon, why don't you just talk briefly about derailers, and then we're going to kind of get into really now moving that into a final package of an outcome.
Yeah, good point. I think derailers are a key factor to look at. And a lot of times it's interesting because a person can derail based on a strength they have that they're just overdoing. That's like you might be a really good, confident, strong leader, and the derailer may be that you, in your overconfidence, simply don't listen or and really get feedback from your employees or from your colleagues and your customers and end up running over them rather than being able to really engage with them. So the very thing that you're strongest at can also become a potential sabotage of your career. So it's really helping people see where they've overdone something or perhaps underdone a skill that's really important for them to develop that they've neglected. And making sure that they develop those. So on both sides, we really help. And, of course, the Hogan is a great tool for helping people quickly flag those derailers in their own profiles and be able to sort of identify those so we can start building action plans around those to help them move forward.
Well, and there's other instruments that we use that can identify derailers just besides the Hogan. We don't want anybody to believe that the Hogan is the end-all, be-all to identifying derailers because one of the things that the 16PF picks up is emotional intelligence and the whole concept around emotional stability, which the Hogan doesn't necessarily get into, but touches, they kind of cross-populate one another. And then another derailer is the critical thinking skills component piece and our ability to look at the depth and breadth of a person's critical thinking skills with the three instruments that we use is also a potential derailer. So one of the things that in the deepest of assessments, it helps us look at that. But once we identify that, then we've got to bring that to a process to now sit down with the executive and say, okay, so how do we debrief with the individual and how we debrief with management and how touchy can this kind of situation conversation be? And the debrief with the manager is critical because it's getting them to take the acceptance. And I use this statement that said, a man or woman went over against his will is of the same opinion still. I remember I did a 360 and interviews in Japan for a U.S. president of a division of a multi-billion-dollar Japanese corporation, and worked with the U.S. president to do his coaching, to which when I came back from Japan and we mapped out all the things in terms of the development plan that he wanted me to help craft for him based on what I learned and gleaned when coming back from Japan, guess how much he actually got done in the next 6 months? Zero. Guess where he was at in about 8 months? He was out the door. So in Gordon, my experience, we look for that coaching contract. So speak to the coaching contract, will you, Gordon?
Good point, exactly. And I think this is really when you talk about from beginning to end, how do we pull all this together? The first key piece after the assessment is that accountability contract where you're really clear this is what you're programming to accomplish. These are your business goals. These are your development goals. And that's something that both the executive and their manager are generally clear about, certainly on the business perspective of what's going to be accomplished. So you have a framework from which we can always return to see have we accomplished what we needed to or not. And to put some teeth in that, we usually build in action steps. We'll end up meeting on as frequent a basis as needed to make sure that's happening. We may even fold in meetings with the manager to make sure that there is follow-up and accountability on the issues that the person's working on. And, of course, that's going to vary from something that might be a performance issue where you're actually using it as kind of an action plan to a performance improvement plan to a development perspective where you're really helping someone sort of maybe develop in a new area. So basically just to kind of summarize that quickly, we've got the accountability contract and then the generally some action learning activities that that person's working on where they're actually engaging in solving a business problem at the same time reflecting on that and learning new skills that they need in order to be more effective and getting feedback with their coach on their use of those skills. So we really go from the accountability contract to the action learning piece to the reflection and then finally to the evaluation of the business results. So that final evaluation meeting can include the feedback that Rick, you were talking about, as well as a meeting with the manager to see have we gotten where we need to, are we on the right track, or do we need to have a plan B in this case. So,
And one of the things that is important for that executive to walk away with, other than just a debrief, is some type of report or document or further insight. And one of the things we have is a management development report that we utilize extensively in our coaching practice. It's a computer-generated report that comes from the 16PF and flags out areas of leadership development with activities, exercises, reading, suggested reading. The Hogan itself from the DeRealers report we use is a self-contained report also that comes out with specific action items. And so those two reports are beneficial. But then we have a more sophisticated approach with our executive development report, and those are customized reports. They're not computer-generated, as comes out in the 16PF and Hogan reports, but the executive development report is a customized approach that specifically speaks to and hones in on everything from the interview, the 360, their assessment results, helps an executive map to the challenges as it relates to the competencies. The executive wants that. We did a lot of leadership work with Corporate Express on this and have some examples of those for people who'd like to see examples of that outcome of that work. But that's the depth that then allows Gordon and I the coaching. So let's talk about maybe the coaching contract that we use, Gordon. We got about another minute or so to talk about the coaching, how long we engage in a customer in a coaching contract.
Exactly. And that can be anywhere from in the emergency situation where we're talking about a crisis, it could be a week to 2 weeks sort of initial intervention with some follow-up parameters that are then followed up with the manager. And so our involvement can be relatively quick in that situation. In some of the more extensive ones that we're talking about, we would generally look at about a three-month period with meetings scheduled based on need from anywhere from a weekly or biweekly process, usually at least twice a month during that time, in which we're really doing follow-up on making sure the action learning is happening. And then depending on the need at that point, we may do an additional three-month follow-up with less frequent meetings just to make sure that the learning is being integrated and consolidated and there's the person isn't backsliding but really has taken on the new learning and made the shift. So we try to leverage that motivation during the crisis time often or the key motivation time to see those changes, and then we look for consolidating it over a 3 to 6 month process is usually sort of standard for a project like this.
So we appreciate you listening in on this show. Next week's show, Gordon and I are going to talk about coaching from an organizational perspective. We've been talking about coaching from an executive perspective, performance coaching, and the different kinds of coaching and our process around intervention and what we do to support an organization's needs and an executive's needs in the coaching piece, and our approach and philosophy and why we think that we've got a pretty solid deliverable that can have great outcomes. So you've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. My guest has been Dr. Gordon Medlock, also my business associate. We'll be back on again next week. Have a great week. For those of you who have any questions, write us at rick@theeg.com. That's theeg.com. We'll be glad to answer your questions or email you back with our thoughts or ideas. So have a great week, and we'll look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.